This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Debbie Kennedy. Our topic tonight has to do with the date of separation issues of divorcing couples. That stretch of pavement between why is his car still in the driveway and that I'm free decree. To help us navigate through all the twists and turns are two guests, Jason Elter and BJ Fadum. Both are specialists in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization and are also members of the Executive Committee of Family Law Section of the State Bar. Jason, BJ, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Debbie.
This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the California Board of Legal Specialization, the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and the Lawyer Referral Service of San Francisco. First of all, let me say I am not a lawyer, so my questions aren't very lawyery, so I'm going to leave all the lawyering up to you. But let's define our terms. What are we talking about? Separation, legal separation, trial separation, date of separation. Tell me all about it.
Thanks, Debbie. There's really two types of separation. There's the legal separation, which is a status determination, if you will. We're going to talk more about the date of separation, which is when the marriage breaks down.
Okay.
That is the date where, for purposes, one person says, I'm done, and they start to act on it. The breakdown of marriage is defined as the irreparable breakdown, and no counseling or so forth will ever assist in saving the marriage. And so that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Is that physical separation. And the question is, why is this important? It's
sure.
important for really two primary situations, which is property division as well as spousal support. All property that's acquired during marriage is going to be divided when you go through a divorce. Any property that's acquired after that date of separation will be deemed to be your separate property. And the same thing as applies to debts, if you will. So any debt that you incur after that date of separation is going to be your own separate debt, and you're going to be held liable for that separate debt, and that's not going to be taken into consideration in the division of, if you will, of the assets and debts.
Sure.
And also in terms of spousal support, date of separation is important for spousal support because in California, there is this presumption that if you're married for less than 10 years, you're going to receive spousal support for half the length of the marriage. Now, it's a presumption. So if you present sufficient evidence, it may be more or less, but that's where the court's going to start.
So 10 years is that magic number kind of a thing.
It is.
And it's what the courts considered past 10 years is a long-term marriage is what Jake's talking
okay.
about. Whereas you're going to have temporary spousal support if it's under 10 years. You're going to have – we call it permanent, but there's no real permanent spousal support usually when it's 10 years or more.
Okay.
Exactly. And so after that 10 years, that presumption no longer exists. And so spousal support after a 10-year marriage may last for 11 years or may last indefinitely. And
okay.
so that 10-year marker is – important for determination of spousal support.
Now, what about this date of separation? Now, that is a
that's the date. And what we're talking about is because we're a community property state, and everybody hears that over and over and over again. But when you get right down to it, I get clients when I first talk to them, and I say, "Well, we're a community property state." They really don't understand what does that
but
really
yours
mean.
Yours is mine, and mine is mine too. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I get told that all the time, but. What it really means is from the date of marriage until that date of separation that we're talking about, your earnings, any debt you acquired, is presumed to be community and has to be divided equally upon divorce or legal separation. And that's why, as Jake was saying, that date of separation is so crucial.
Okay, and we determine that by
many ways.
Okay.
So that's the question, isn't
that's
it?
That's the question.
That's it. Okay.
Right now, the date of separation is controlled by Family Code Section 70. Which is a new family code section that just went into effect. And that new code section, in essence, has reinstated what we believe to be the law before then. And
okay.
we can get into that later. But the question, so right now, the date of separation is defined by that date when a person articulates, says, the marriage is over, and then starts to act on it.
Okay.
And so you need those two principles. You need the declaration, if you will, the statement, to either the spouse, you would suppose, or another person. But then you also need the action. You need to – the person needs to demonstrate that they are now following that new form of belief.
Does that mean calling up and hiring a lawyer or
– Well, that may or may not be the date of separation. But what we're not talking about is like, you know, get into a fight and say, I'm done, I'm out of here, and they storm out the front door. which I may do on maybe a monthly
basis.
Sit in
the car, smoke a cigarette, and then
right,
come back
right.
in.
Right, right. That's not your date of separation. What we're talking about is the two-pronged test of not only making it clear so that there's a meeting of the minds that this marriage isn't going to go forward, but then you act on it. Don't just say, okay, it's we're done, and then you just go back and watch TV and go back to bed and continue doing everything.
Does that mean physically moving out or away from each other? How does that?
It may or may not, but that's what the crucial change was.
Okay.
So the court at this point will consider all the circumstances. And the circumstances are everything from the living arrangements as they may have existed before and exist now. We live in the Bay Area, and so it's really hard for someone to say, I'm done, I'm out, and then move across the street. Usually they say that, and they move down the hallway or into the garage.
$5,000 a month rent? You better
right.
believe it.
They got to wait for the family residence to be sold, so they're going to live together.
I call that the sheetrock separation. There is a sheetrock between where you and he or she sleeps.
More than a curtain.
Exactly. And but there's other circumstances that are relevant.
Sure.
So, for example, we have social media. What is your status? Have you changed it?
Really?
On Facebook.
Wow.
And what are you communicating to other people?
So that could determine the data.
Oh, lawyers love Facebook, Twitter, blogs. We love it. Be careful if you're involved in a divorce. Be careful what you put on social media. We use it in court all the time. But like Jake said, you change your status on Facebook. Yeah, it might be used.
Okay, wow. That's good to know.
You know, for a few years ago, that may not have been as relevant as it is now.
Sure.
Based on how many people, followers you have, if you will.
Great.
So other considerations that the court may consider is, as we're talking about, your contact with other family members. How are you representing yourself to neighbors, your immediate family members, professionals, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some other considerations would be, for example, was there a change? And now we're talking about when everyone is still living in the house. That's really the more difficult situation, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The more common situation also, which is where someone in the marriage has said, we're over, the marriage is done, and they start to act on it, but they are forced to or have to continue to live it continuously as they did before in terms of sharing expenses, maybe who's making the meals, who's picking up and dropping off the kids. And so all this is relevant in terms of the court determining whether or not you actually have made that determination. And this is the critical point. Have you reached that mental state of mind, which is the marriage is over and I'm moving on and I'm acting on it?
Mm-hmm.
And because if you have someone who has that conclusion, let me restate that, who says, you know what, we're done.
Right.
But then maybe later on starts to act as if maybe they didn't mean it.
So they reconcile or try to go to maybe counseling or something like that?
And that could be that's a term of art used a lot in divorce cases. Because if there has been a quote-unquote reconciliation that we recognize by law, then you have a new date of separation if they break down again. So you got to be very careful. A lot of people say, well, we're trying to reconcile or we're doing this. There's case law that will control that. And that can affect your date of separation.
I see.
Often people will physically separate, but they continue to go to the marriage counselor in the attempt to reconcile and to save the marriage. Under those circumstances, case law supports the conclusion that you still have not ended the marriage.
Okay.
You still believe that the marriage can be saved. And that's where the language is critical, where it's irreparable.
So is that the difference between like a separation and a legal separation? Or
that's completely different. So people file in court and you file your petition, you can file for divorce, dissolution of the marriage, or legal separation. If you go for the dissolution of the marriage, you actually are going to terminate the marital status. As legal separation, you can go through and distribute the property, all of that. You do essentially stop the community estate, but you are not, your marital status is not terminated. You're still legally married.
Uh-huh.
I get a lot of Catholics that will go for legal separation instead of divorce. There's many different reasons why people opt for a legal separation as opposed to divorce, or because they don't have the residency requirements, will start with a petition for legal separation and then later amend it and become divorced.
Okay.
It was just to add on to that, this is a conversation and a misconception that people often have, which is, oh, well, we're legally separated because we're living apart. No, you're not. You're still married. Right. The legal separation is describing your legal status. You either are married or you're separate and single. Or right. Check that. You're either married or legally separated or you're single. And the process that you go through for a divorce is the same process that you go through for a legal separation. The only difference is at the end of the process, you are either single, your status has been terminated and you're now a single person, or you are now legally separated.
But still married.
But still married.
But still married. You get a judgment of legal separation. Don't get married again yet.
But all the issues in terms of property and spousal support and custody, visitation, attorney fees, they're all resolved in that judgment. But at the end, you're still legally married. And as BJ was saying, there's only my experience is there's a narrow range of reasons why people are still going to do the legal separation, which is a religious purposes
sure.
that you don't believe in the concept of
divorce
terminating the marital status. And also what marriages that have lasted for many, many years where insurance, health insurance, or beneficiary issues is something that they want to preserve because they've been married for 40 years and they don't want to...
So retirement income and Social Security.
Well, and to be clear, though, you have to agree that you're going to do the legal separation because if one person wants to terminate the marital status, they have the constitutional right to do so, and they can, and the court will do so.
Mm-hmm.
The legal separation, frankly, is only by agreement of both parties.
Okay.
But otherwise, we're talking more about the physical separation, which is has the bearing on, as we're talking about, the property rights and spousal support rights.
Okay, and this has to do with that new law.
Right. Now, before, as we were talking about, before Family Code Section 771 controlled what was defined as the date of separation, and that law said that you needed to be living in separate. You had to be separate. Living
households.
Separate addresses.
Exactly.
Right. But we interpreted it all these years. Judges, attorneys, we all continue to apply the law as Jake was just reciting until
the new law.
Until the new law. Until the new case came down.
Exactly. In 2015, there was a case, Marriage of Davis,
okay.
that said, you know what? The code section says that earnings and accumulations of a spouse were living separate and apart. And that's the key language of the old law, living separate and apart. And the court said that can only mean one thing, that you are living in separate residences. And
not separate parts of the house, just...
separate
addresses.
And apart. Exactly.
Okay.
And up until that point, again, the lawyers and the judges, everyone was acting as if, nah, you know what, you can be, as I said, the sheetrock divorce,
right.
separation, living in the garage,
mm-hmm.
and that's separate. And when Davis came down, that just flipped everything over. And everyone was realizing, oh, my gosh, I have a case right now where my clients are still living together, even though we are in the midst of a heated custody support battle, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, they haven't separated. And so at that point, and this is where the games can be played, if you will, in terms of what people were doing from that time, which was June of 2015, all the way through to the end of 2016. The new law went into effect January 1st, 2017, and that new law said, you know what, we're setting aside Davis to the best of our ability, and we're going to define retroactively that it means that you have made that declaration and you've acted on it. You don't necessarily need to be living separate and apart. But there is this nuance now where in the Davis case that says, or let me restate that, there are these exceptions as to whether or not this law is retroactive based on how parties were living during this period that we're talking about, which is June 2015 through to the end of 2016. Because if you were, for example, let's say in June 2015, have already filed for divorce,
okay.
there was already a support order in effect, there was already a custody and visitation order in effect, but you are also still living in the same house.
Okay.
And at that time, you would presume that your attorney would come to you and say, hey, there was a new case that came down, and this is kind of going to complicate your current situation because you're still living together. And under this law...
So they can't get divorced.
Well, they can get divorced. The question is, when is that date of separation? And that date of separation is important because of, let's say, during that time, one of the parties went out and bought a Lexus on credit card. Well, all right. Now, is that a community debt, or is that going to be on your tab, if you will? And so Davis... If you interpret and apply Davis at that time in, say, August of 2015, that's a community debt. Even though, and so that's where people start to play those games. And there is, and there's
winning
that,
the lottery and hiding the ticket.
Right. Well, but what also happened was when that case came down and we got the decision, family law attorneys were rushing back to our office and looking through our files and talking to our paralegals. Okay, what case is this going to affect? And part of the gamesmanship was, if your clients were still living under the same roof but wanted an earlier date of separation, you wanted to delay to see if they – because we knew Davis was going to finally go away because the court actually invited everybody. He said they said, write new legislation. We're stuck with this. We don't like it either. And so as attorneys, we knew that the new law was coming up the horizon. So if we had an issue that was going with the date of separation that was going to be applied negatively for our client, we wanted to delay going forward on the date of separation. Okay. Whereas if the attorneys on the other side, they were like, no, come on, let's get going. We got to get this date of separation going.
And there was a lot of debate while the bill was moving through as to whether or not the new law should be retroactive or not. And there was discussion. Sometimes the bill had there was proposed language that would say no, or it's not retroactive, which actually is by not saying anything. The way that the law is that if you don't say it's retroactive, then it's just going to be presumed to be retroactive, unless you come in and say, this is not retroactive. It's going to be effective January 1st, 2017. Otherwise, Davis controlled during that period or
so
the old law.
Anything that was before that
right.
goes to the old law.
And there was a lot of debate back and forth. And then the idea was, you know what? Everyone had been relying on what the old law was before the Davis case came through in June of 2015. And so let's make it retroactive unless people were acting on, and this is, there are the code sections that say that if you have property rights, constitutional rights that you were relying on based on that new law on Davis. This is the example where you'd already filed divorce, you already had custody visitation orders, but you're still living in the same house, and the lawyer called you in the office and said, hey, guess what? You need to stay in that house, and you're not moving because it's going to extend your marriage beyond 10 years, and you're going to be able to get more spousal support.
Oh.
Or, hey, you know what? His company is going to be liquidated, he's going to get the stocks, and it's going to be all cashed out. You want that to be community property? Stay in the house.
I see.
And so you will have these situations where people are staying in the house. And so it
not because they want to reconcile, but they want
because
to,
they want
there's a payout in the end there.
Right. And the proponents of the Davis, like the bright line rule, is you either get out of the house or you're not separated. But the other side of it is there's so many other nuances to it. Plus, I mean, to be perfectly honest, all of the drama and the facts and circumstances that get the attention are in some of these data separation cases, because what we'll do is you have to get the data separation established first before you can move on with the rest of the financial and the property of the divorce. So a lot of times we'll do what we call bifurcate. We'll take that issue and we'll have trials just on the data separation. I've had 2-week trials just to determine the data separation. Wow. And that's where all the dirt comes out, the affairs, everything else, things that are going to determine, do we have a data separation? When is that?
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Debbie Kennedy in for Chuck Finney this evening. My guests, and we're talking about the date of separation and why that's important. My guests are Jason and Elter. Sorry about that. Jason Elter and B.J. Fadum. And we are talking about the importance of the date of separation and why you might want to make sure that you have it in the proper perspective. And there's a new law that came out that it will help determine that stuff. Okay. So,
issues of the data separation that as Jake was bringing up a little bit stronger was you have to make sure that it's communicated that we are going to separate. I have cases I've seen where it was kept secret. I'm out of this marriage. But I'm not going to tell you. And then
okay.
10 years, and in one particular case,
and she's
10
still
years
doing his laundry. And
oh, yeah, exactly. Doing the laundry, whatever. He's having a whole other family. And 10 years up the line, oh, it's time to go get the divorce. By the way, we were separated 10 years ago. So all this stock, all this retirement, it's accumulated. And by the way, the houses that I bought and put under my fiance's name, that's not community. That's all
that was
separate.
A Lifetime movie, I think.
There were several movies on that, I'm sure. Yeah.
There's a lot of factual patterns, examples that you can come up with that can just articulate the problems that you can have. We live in the Bay Area, and so this is a place where people will be entrepreneurs and start their own businesses. And an example would be where at some point in the marriage, he did move down the hall. He's living in the guest room, and they lived like that for a few years. And an example, real example, is where they were living like that, and then a close family friend dies. They go to the funeral. And after the funeral, they come back, and she walks into the bedroom and says, "You know, I wish it was you that we put into the ground." And his response was, "You know what? That's it. I'm done. We're over." And then they continue to live in the house for another 9 years, raise the kids. And during that time, he starts a business, and eventually it gets bought up, and he is paid out, you know, $10, $12 million plus. And she says, "Oh, by the way, you know, that's half of that's mine." And so that's where, even though you may live like that for 9 years, in that case went to trial, and the court said, no, that date where they went to that really close friend family funeral, and she came in and she said that, and he said, "You know what? That's it. We're done." That was the date of separation. And that was the only incident that the court needed to 9 years later say, no, date of separation was back then. Even though you're now living together, you raise these kids, and you continue to live like, share expenses and so forth, that was the significant event where the court.
But do you need a lawyer to determine that significant event? How do you come up with that event? That
if you don't have an agreement about it, you're going to have to litigate it. And then you have to determine, is it worth it? Okay. That's one thing, and I talk to my clients about this a lot. What I usually take a look at is if we've got a conflict in the date of separation between the two sides, what is it really going to affect? Take a look at the retirement. How much difference are we really talking about? Were there any stock options, or, you know, what's the dollar amount? Because if you're going to litigate it, you've got to look at how much is it going to cost to litigate the date of separation to get started, as opposed to how much are you really trying to save or protect. It might not be worth it. I've had cases, like I said, 10 years difference. Well, you can imagine how much money was involved there. There was a lot. I have another one where as Jake was saying, an entrepreneur. And in that particular case, she left and moved to a different country, and just because she thought he was a loser and didn't think his business was going to go well. Well, guess what? It got bought for several million dollars. Mm-hmm. And for 9 years been living in a different country, all of a sudden, well, we're not separated.
Uh-huh.
So you got to take a look at what is it really worth, because you got to balance not only the amount it's going to cost to litigate, the headache, also your dirty laundry. That's where the dirty laundry stories come up, is with regard to the date of separation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a key point maybe to take away from this discussion is that if you believe that your marriage is ended, you need to say it.
Okay.
And you need to act on it.
Okay.
And your actions need to be consistent. And so when you see an inconsistent action, which is maybe going to a funeral together or going to an anniversary party together or doing something together that you would do as a couple, but in this circumstance, you're only doing it because that's the right thing to do, if you will, to go together, because not to complicate situations.
They were family. And
right. And so even though you may be doing all this, you know, washing your own underwear and all that stuff, even though you may be acting that way, if you have these events later on that may be evidence of, maybe there is some reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
I would advise my clients that if you have something like that, be clear, put it in writing saying, you know what, we're going to this funeral together, but we're still done.
Okay.
And so if you're able to maintain that chain, if you will, of separation, that will be much more beneficial.
Don't have too much wine at the funeral.
Well, you can have wine. Just make sure you don't sleep together.
Exactly. Don't wake up in the same bed the next morning.
because then you'll have to
you've muddied the waters.
Date of separation.
You better real quickly say, you know what, that was fun, but we're not together.
I see.
So it's be aware. If you believe that the marriage is over, don't waffle, because that waffling will create that ambiguity.
Sure.
If you will, that leaves the door open for the court to decide. No, you didn't separate. I think it was later date.
So you have to be really sure.
Not only do you have to be sure, you have to act on it, okay. And it has to be clear, unambiguous, if you will, from other people who are not personal, have the confidential information as to the bed pillow talk, if you will, of we're done.
Okay. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Debbie Kennedy in for Chuck Finney, and we were talking about the date of separation for divorcing couples and why it is really important to really be hard and fast on that date. My guests, Jason Elter and V.J. Fatum, and they are both family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, members of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar Association. And I am not a lawyer. That's why you guys are here talking about this the way it legally divorced as opposed to legal separation and trial separation and those kind of things. So
so one of the questions that were raised earlier before we even went on the air was this idea about nesting, and I don't know if people have heard about it because that may have affected people where the parents rotate in the same household.
Yeah, and we will talk about that in just a few minutes, if you will. Okay, we'll continue this the show, but first, this is our spring membership campaign, and Devin Strolovich is here and has some information to entice you into supporting the show and the station. Hi, Devin.
Hey, Debbie. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're often on this side of the glass.
I know. This is very odd and strange.
What's the experience been like?
Scary and exhilarating, and it's very interesting to have these kind of discussions.
Well, it's such an important program, Your Legal Rights, both at KALW and in the Bay Area in general. Where else is there free legal advice?
Free legal advice.
That is not quite legal advice because they can't give that kind of advice over the air. But
well, we do give it once a month.
Of
call
course.
A lawyer night.
Yeah. So that I mean,
that
your
is real free legal advice.
That is real free legal advice off the air, but part of what KALW brings to the community. And if you're a listener, and we know Chuck Finney has a huge listenership out there, now is the time to give us a call. 1-800-525-9917 is the number, 1-800-KALW-917, or go online at KALW.org. I'd like to thank a few listeners who have called or clicked. Louis DeRosa from San Francisco, Carrie Spivak, also from San Francisco, and Catherine Chaitin from Oakland, who has this to say. She wants to give a huge shout-out to Chuck Finney, both for how kind and respectful he is to all callers, and also for the great service he provides, and tonight, that Debbie provides. 800-525-917 or online at KALW.org.
That's right, 800-525-9917, KALW.org. And on the website, you can make a donation, a contribution, become a sustaining member. We love sustaining members. That takes a little bit out of your checking, your savings, or a credit card every month. And we don't have to send out paperwork and letters to remind you to contribute to local public radio. And it cuts down on the paperwork, and we can spend more of your money on the programming that you enjoy and value.
And we really do. KALW is a creative engine powered by its listeners. Along with Your Legal Rights, there's 32 hours of original programming every week, from Your Legal Rights to Philosophy Talk, Open Air.
Fog City Blues.
Fog City Blues coming up in
That's
a little bit.
Show.
The Wednesday night blues block and Sound Opinions, the world's only rock and roll talk show, coming up after that at 11. If these are important programs to you, and you tune in and call in and participate in Your Legal Rights or Fog City Blues or both, I mean, it's Wednesday after all, 800-525-9917 or online at KALW.org. And KALW tries to minimize the interruptions to the programming because that's what you've tuned in for. And that's why we'll now go back
that's
to
right.
Debbie Kennedy and Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much, Devin. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Debbie Kennedy. My guests are Jason Elter and BJ Fadem. Jason and BJ are both specialists in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, are also members of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And we're talking about what it means to separate from a marriage, the date of separation issues of divorcing couples. I was just reading that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner, who were married for 10 years, the magic number, have been separated since 2015 and only now finalizing their divorce. I'm wondering if that is a time frame kind of typical. They said that they were spending all that time working out their post-marital relationships. And I know they may have more financial issues than the rest of us, but I don't know how much different or not is their situation from the rest of ours. And if you have a question on the separation process prior to divorce, please call our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK or 415-841-4134. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. And to participate in the program tonight, you can call 866-798-8255 or 415-841-4134. So let us continue with our discussion. We were talking
about the nesting.
Nesting.
We're kind of moving away from it, but for a period of time, a lot of mental health professionals were recommending parents with children, especially the younger children.
It's better for the kids.
It's better for the kids. So what they would do, in fact, my neighbors did it when I was growing up, and the parents would rotate in and out of the house. Mm. That's a situation where under Davis would have created a real problem as to when is that date of separation. They were doing it for the children, but I did have a couple of clients that were actually still practicing that nesting process when Davis came down. And so you can imagine the conversations that I had in my office. But one of the other things that we were talking about, and as Jake and I were explaining, that we're a community property state, and a lot of people don't know what that means as opposed to separate property.
Okay.
Because when you're getting a divorce, if it is your separate property or your separate debt, that means just that. It's your separate property. There's no offset that you have to pay the other side. So, for example, let's say you had a house prior to marriage, was already paid off, completely paid off. You didn't contribute any money or anything. Prior to marriage, you left it by itself. That's your separate property. You don't have to divide that. Under certain circumstances, you might, but you don't have to. Or another example would be you brought certain antiques or furniture into the marriage, into the house, and you had it way before marriage. You leave with that. You do not have to pay the other party one half of that value. Whereas when we're talking about community property, what we mean is you have to take a hold of the community estate at the time of divorce and account for all that, both the debts and the assets, and somehow by value or by kind divide it so that it's equal, that the parties walk away with an equal their share, one half of the community estate.
So say if you owned a house and then you met someone and you married that person and they moved in the house with you and you're still making mortgage payments on the house, if you decide to divorce, is that still sole separate property or
that becomes a very complex issue.
Okay.
We could do a whole show just on that, because that has to do with whether or not the deed's been changed, has it been refinanced. But the mere fact of during the marriage, because what we're talking about, and this is where the date of separation is very important, those earnings during that time up until the date of separation is community. And if you've used those earnings to pay down the principal on that mortgage, you've just created a community interest in that house. So you can see again why this date of separation is so crucial, because if you have a situation like that, That's going to – there's a calculation we do to determine how much that community interest is in the house. We call it a Moore-Marsden calculation based on two cases called Marriage of Moore and Marriage of Marsden. But you can see how that calculation is going to change depending upon that date of separation.
Okay.
And to build on that, so hypothetically, let's say you have a couple where one person thinks that the date of separation is, let's say, 2007.
Okay.
And the other person says, no, we've been together. And you go through 12 years of whatever conduct it is. You file for divorce. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, 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 we got divorced way back when I stopped washing, for example, your underwear in 2007. And so the question is, well, so all those payments that I've been making since 2007, was that my community property that I was earning, paying on community debt, or was that my separate property that I was using to pay on the community obligation, the mortgage that we were both living in? Mm-hmm. And in that situation, if the date of separation is all the way back in 2007, then that person has acquired a reimbursement right throughout all that time, as he or she was paying on that community obligation, and they were paying on it using their earnings that they were making at the time. Because as they, and the hypothetical, if in 2017 that paycheck that they got was their separate property, and okay, they were using that separate property to pay on that community obligation, that mortgage that everyone was living in, and the court would, if they believe that date of separation it was in 2007, is going to turn around and say, hey, you're both living in that house, you, the other spouse, you need to contribute your one half to pay on that mortgage. And so the guy or girl who was paying on that gets that reimbursement right, which can be significant if you're talking 10 years of one half of the mortgage payment. Exactly. Okay. So it can be significant. And it's one of those things where the people who are living in the situation, they may like the arrangement because everyone is able to get through month to month, because that's a lot what most people are doing, is trying to make it month to month, if right, you will, in terms of meeting their monthly expense obligation. And it may be a comfortable situation, but they may not realize that he or she is acquiring a significant reimbursement month after month. And it's okay if you're, well, it's not as painful if you're talking 6 or 8 months versus talking 6 or 8 years, because it can add up. And we're not just talking about, for example, the mortgage payment, or maybe we're talking about HELOC loan, a unsecured debt, credit cards, or so forth. You ran up the credit card, and we got married, and we ran up that credit card, and I've been paying on it ever since.
Right.
And so
it was an expensive wedding and a fabulous, fabulous honeymoon.
And so the right of reimbursement can add up and be significant, especially over the period of time. And it can be very detrimental if a person doesn't realize that their marriage has ended. They've been operating under the pretext of, hey, you know what? I like how he or she's paying for these things. I like this arrangement that's
I don't
acceptable.
Have to move, you know. And
right.
Or, the kids are okay, and they're still going to the good school.
And it can be even more complicated if you have, as we're saying, this nesting arrangement where there is this apartment someplace else that may be under both names of the lease. And that's relevant. All right, so you both signed a lease, and so have you really separated, or is this just another residence that you guys have figured out how to move everyone around, if you will?
Hmm.
And so it's...
Let the games begin.
Well, and that's where we go back before, where my advice is that if you have any question, continue to make it clear time and again, we are done. We are done. And try to act to it to the best of your ability. Now, if you have this sharing of expenses, that's where then you need to say, hey, you know what? You're paying for this. I'm not asking for support because you're paying for this. And that's where it becomes helpful, because a lot of times you don't have that exchange of communication, if you will. And there is no articulation of expectations, which is really the critical part.
Divorcing couples don't communicate very well.
And that's the problem. And the other problem is we get this all the time. Don't keep it verbal. Because when the communication does break down and they come to their respective attorneys, my client's going to tell me one thing. Opposing counsel's going to say, well, my client said this. Of course. If you do, during the time that you do have some kind of an agreement, like Jake was saying, you know, let's say we're going to agree that I am going to continue to share the mortgage, but this is my separate property, or I'm sharing the mortgage in lieu of support. Because here's the deal, you're going to be sharing this in lieu of support, and then all of a sudden when, you know, the other party gets angry, they're going to be hit with spousal support and child support, and you haven't really paid a dime. And then
they're really angry then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So again, you have to make it very, very clear with each other. But again, put it in some kind of written form.
Right.
One of the things that the court looks at are what are the expectations of the parties. And so if the expectation is I will never have to reimburse you because this is how we do business, this is how we operate and function as a family, especially when you have kids, that's relevant. Sure. And you can have that situation even if you're living in separate residences.
Right, because you have to share.
Well, and to your point earlier on about Ben and Angelina, you got to imagine a situation where people are, that's their routine, is that people come and go. We have multiple, we have two households, and this is how we just manage. I travel regularly. I'm out of the country for 3 or 4 months at a time. That's part of my business. That's what I do. And when I come home, you go visit your mother or whatever it is. And the key is that when there is that determination by one person that you are able to point to a date, change in your behavior, or the behavior of another person, if you will, that the court can rely on the court believes the judge will conclude that that person reached that mental conclusion, that state of mind that the marriage is over, no matter what counseling or whatever we're done.
Okay. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Debbie Kennedy, and for Chuck Finney, if you have questions on the separation process prior to a divorce, you can call our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or 415-841-4134. My guests are B.J. Fadum and Jason Alter, and they are specialists in this process, and we would love to hear from you. If you've got an issue, we can't give you direct legal advice, but I'm sure there's a way that we can answer your questions in a general tone that will help all of us navigate through this process.
So one of the other things that this new law is going to allow us to go back to again for the date of separation is that the court again looks at the uniqueness of each marriage. And this is what Jake was alluding to also earlier. Everybody has their own type of marriage. I mean, we don't have the nuclear family anymore, really. But every marriage has their own process and the way they carry it out. Like you mentioned, Ben and Jennifer Gardner, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Gardner. Their marriage is certainly not going to look like any of ours. I mean, with the houses and so forth. Other clients I've had where they've had international employment, they don't always live together. Every marriage looks a little bit different. And so when you talk about the date of separation, what may look like separation to one family is their normal lifestyle in another.
Right. So they're not, spending the weekends at the soccer practice and, they have nannies taking the kids places and they hardly are with each other but are still married.
Exactly. In fact, I think those are the long-term marriages are the ones that don't live together. But
but that's a whole other subject.
That's a whole other subject and a whole other program. However, it does. I mean, the marriage is not standard. And what was happening with Davis is was trying to put a bright line on it that could have affected a lot of different people and could have negatively affected also or allowed one party to manipulate the system where they did live in separate homes. We've been separated this whole time because we've been living in separate homes, and that's what Davis said.
But there's a pot of gold somewhere.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's where you have to really take a look at what about these two people? How is their marriage? And the other thing is a lot of people live in such a way or they make their arrangements because of the kids. I still get clients that will say, well, we're going to stay together under the same roof for the children.
Right.
They are fighting. They are calling each other names. They are slamming doors.
Screaming matches.
Matches. But they still may do that. But they're separated in their separate rooms. So there's all these dynamics. And the courts, if you can't agree, the courts are going to decide it for you.
Okay.
I've had cases like that where they will fight and they live together for 10 years. And for whatever reason, every now and then they end up in the same bed every night, or every other night, or once a month,
after
or whatever.
A little too much wine,
exactly.
Maybe.
And it's just, it's it.
That's their marriage.
Exactly. And over a period of time, it's like, all right, did you ever separate? This
right.
is how we live. This is our marriage. And so in those circumstances, I think you would need an even more dramatic situation right. of
like catching somebody.
Well, you know, it depends. How many times did you catch the spouse before? And did you say, all right, you know what, we're moving on? And was there an event? One of the cases are hypothetical that you can consider is, let's say you have a really traditional marriage and a couple who, you know what, I don't want to say traditional, but let's say you don't believe in divorce
okay.
as a religious concept. And so you continually catch your spouse cheating and you keep saying, you know what, no more. And he or she says, all right, you're right, I won't do it anymore. But you keep catching and you keep catching. And at some point, let's say the spouse, and this is the hypothetical, where, you know what, you're going to wash your own underwear from now on. But nothing else changes. And there was a case where that was the turning point of the whole relationship. And that was where the court said, that was the determining factor, even though you continue to live together for another 5 years.
Hey, we have a caller on the line. It's Shaw in Hayward. Welcome to Your League Rights.
So my question is, when there is separation of property, or there is issue with debt on the property, so the bank has problem refinancing and solely putting the property under the ex-spouse's name. But in the meantime, if there's default in property, both spouses get affected with credit reports and debt situation, how does the judicial system resolve those?
We actually run into that a lot in California right now. So what's happening is when there is a divorce and there's a family residence, one party may want to purchase the house from the other party, meaning this is what the other spouse's community interest is. I'll pay you that, and then I want to own the house. It could be for many different reasons. The problem lies where you can't – the loan is in both names. You cannot – continue to hold the other spouse on that loan, which means that you're going to have to completely refinance the house and get it out of their name and into either your name alone, or you find another co-signer. This is what he's talking about. In the meantime, what happens is they can't get it refinanced, and then maybe that person is in default of right. the mortgage, and it's affecting both credit. What I usually do, and I've had these cases afterwards, you know, you want to make sure that you catch it ahead of time. Don't let it get to that point. The person that's going to be staying in the house should be the one that can maintain the mortgage with or without support. You've got to make sure of that. And when you do what we call the buyout, you know, who's going to do the buyout, look at it. Give deadlines first of getting qualified for that loan. And if they don't, the house goes immediately up for sale, or the other party has the option to buy. There's all different things you can do. But the whole idea is you don't want to get to that point where the house is going to go into foreclosure. Then we went into other issues, which is called wasting a community asset, maybe breaching a fiduciary duty, other complexities. But when it comes to that part of it, you want to make sure that you cover it and don't let it get too far out, because it will affect the credit of the other party, and then they're not going to be able to buy anything even if it does get sold.
And a second consideration in terms of how data separation may be how data separation may play into this is I think you referenced unpaid taxes and so forth, is that if you are the person who wants to buy that house and that data separation was some time before and you've been living in that house, you're going to have to pay all those property taxes. That's all that's going to be taken into consideration. Sure. As opposed to, let's say, data separation was today and property taxes have been already paid both for last year and moving forward, then there is it's a community debt and the community expense has paid it, and now you refinance the house and you don't have to take in consideration to a certain extent the taxes that have been paid on past property dues and so forth.
Exactly. And the data separation can affect potential reimbursements for the person either that's living in the house or that left the house. So you got to be very, very careful. They're called Watts-Epstein type of credits, and you've got to be very, very careful, and that's where the data separation can influence those reimbursements.
And very often you get situations where the non-income earner stays in the house with the kids.
Okay.
And the income earner moves out of the house. And the income earner continues to pay all of the expenses that are associated with the house,
right,
which would be the mortgage, utilities.
Insurance.
Let's say even he or she's putting a certain amount of money every month into an account that pays for the food for the kids and the other spouse who are living in the house. And he or she is also paying their own separate living expenses, the apartment that they're living in or whatever.
Right.
And so that's a situation where the spouse, the in-house spouse, as we call them, the person who's in the house, who's having all these things paid for him or her, that they, this is a situation where they like it. This is not a, this is a good situation. I'm getting things paid for and I don't like the change. Unknowingly, or they may be unaware, that the other side is accumulating a significant amount of reimbursement rights. And I've seen situations where that goes on for several years, and then the spouse who is living in the house comes in and says, hey, you know, we're getting divorced. We finally decided to do it, and because we filed papers last week. And, well, guess what? The date of separation was whenever he or she moved out. And
sure. When they had separate addresses, you would...
Arguably. I mean, and you could see the other spouse. I said, no. We kept going to parties, and we kept going to social events. I was going to his business parties,
soccer practice.
We never told anyone. My Facebook status still has us as married. And so this is where it really does start to get complicated, where it may appear to between them that maybe they're separated, but if one spouse is going to benefit from staying married, then that's where the ambiguity becomes a problem.
And you really didn't want to be married to that person anyway if they're going to be that
The reality is that that's very often happens, is that you have a spouse who stayed home, raised the kids, so forth, and they can't live together in the same household. If they just physically separate, you know what? Guess what? Everyone else, everything else seems to kind of work together.
Right.
And they're willing to stay in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of it is that, you know, when you were living together in one household and paying just all one bill, it's one thing, and especially when it's just only one spouse supporting. When you separate and try and take that one income and split it into two households, it becomes really, really difficult.
Especially in the Bay Area. We have Emmanuel in Oakland, quickly. Emmanuel, hi.
Hello, hi, how you doing?
Good. Your question?
Yeah, my question is, I am separating, I'm divorcing with my wife, and I'm in the court. She have a lawyer, I don't have a lawyer. We have a house in Oakland, and the loan for the house is under my wife's name, but we are on the title. So we didn't do the property separation yet. We're going to go for that in the court. I was just wondering who have the option to buy if she is under loan, but we are both on the title. I just want to know.
Okay, thank you.
So either has an option to buy, but what to consider, she probably is in the better position because she would not have to refinance the loan and pay your community interest in the property because she's already on the loan. All she would have to do is calculate what the community interest is, pay him, maybe get an equity line of credit to do that, another loan, and then he just has to sign an interspousal transfer deed. Whereas if he wanted to buy her out, he'd have to get a whole new loan because she has to come off that loan. So it's not who has the option, the better option, it's just who's in a better position.
Gotcha.
And the person who is on the loan solely is actually in the best position to maintain the house because you don't have to go through the whole process of applying for and obtaining a refinance, basically you're buying the house from the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to apply for as if you were walking into a purchase sale agreement and say, all right, I've got the money. Here it is on my credit and my income alone. Give me the house. Give me the contract in my name.
And you don't have to pay a real estate agent.
Right. And that's usually what most of it is people are jointly on the loans. But when one person is on the loan, that simplifies the division process.
It does.
Well, that is very interesting. And my goodness, we have gone through an hour pretty much. That's about all the time we have for tonight. Thank you so much for your insight, Jason Elter and BJ Fadum.
Thank you.
Next week's program will be the ever popular Landlord-Tenant Laws and Disputes and Issues show with landlord-tenant attorneys Jessica Chilik and Sal Timpano. Thanks to my engineer, Devin Strolovich, producer, Mark McLean. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of the California Board of Legal Specialization and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. Tune in again next week. Chuck Finney will be back in the saddle. I'm Debbie Kennedy.